The recording. So we're officially starting now. Good morning, everyone. Please don't violate any antitrust rules. If you have any questions about that, please look up the Linux Foundation antitrust policy. Do we have anyone new today?
Yes. Dan Anderson from Intel.
Awesome. Would you like to introduce yourself briefly?
Yeah, I've been working on Hyperledger Sawtooth, and my manager suggested I look a little bit at URSA, maybe for some optimization opportunities, and also usability. So I was wondering, I suppose there must be some documentation somewhere, but maybe you could point me to it somewhere, or maybe that has not, maybe it has no new, it's so new it hasn't been developed yet.
So. Yeah, there's unfortunately very little documentation at this point, but it is moving forward.
Okay. So. Thanks.
We finally have a repo for documentation.
Yeah, we just got that last week. So.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, thanks and welcome. And if you have any questions, please feel free to ask. Mike, is there anything, do you want to start with your wish list discussion before we dig into some of the meatier stuff?
It's mostly, does this look okay to people? And basically what I would do is just file JIRA tickets. And then if someone wants to go implement, they can grab a ticket. Or if a PR comes in that matches up one of these items, then they can just, we can assign them the JIRA ticket to match it up. That's mostly what it was for. I didn't try to throw everything under the sun, but I did try to put in there things that I've heard from various groups. So these are all the things I can think of that Libursa would handle. I can't think of anything else. And then obviously Zmix, not much has changed there. And then it looks like John Gator's on the call. I know last time he was saying like we should not dive too deep into the hardware stuff yet, and I'm okay with that, but when is a good time to start looking at that?
Good question. I think my point was more that we need to pick a depth to dive to rather than to not dive into it at all. Because bear in mind the sort of global platform spec, for example, for Secure Elements or for TEE has never actually standardized or landed on any kind of harmonization or comparable technology spec for things like the sort of fuse storage or the quality of separation of key storage. So something like QAT on Intel and a trust zone secured, secure islands that they're calling it now in ARM, seem superficially the same, but are actually very different. And so I think I wanted to stop before that point because it's just very diminishing return for us to deal with. But I think if we wanted to have a broad thing that says this is a chip level separated enclave, this is a software enclave, we could certainly go that far. I just wouldn't want to go much deeper than that. As soon as you get into the implementation of the silicon vendor, Dan might have thoughts on this as well. But as soon as you get into the actual silicon vendor implementation, it'll be kind of thankless.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get down into the silicon.
Let's hope not. I mean, eventually you probably will, but that to me is a while away.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think the important thing was to make sure that the interfaces where we specify, whether by sort of permissioning or whether by explicit code, if you specify that you want an enclave of some sort to be used, we needed to be pretty pretty plain, because you end up getting into issues that, where, for example, the key might be stored in a hardware protected bit, but then it's used in an open peripheral or even just memory map somewhere. And so it would be very tempting to start to specify all of those different things to say, well, you know, the crypto has to be all performed in the same kind of protection level to which it's stored, and so on. And then you get into the question of whether you can use any of the accelerators that are on board and stuff. And you know, it's very easy to fall into that trap, even if you had the intention not to get into the silicon. So I think just keeping it really simple and saying, you know, is this an enclave implementation or not, is the right level to stick at, because we can get our API correct then, and you know, we'd have to accept that we can't implement the finest of all the possibilities in the most perfect way, but I think it'll keep everybody sane.
Yeah, my hope is that we could define the interfaces, and those that want specific implementations like YubiKey, HSMs, or a TPM from ASUS or whatever, then they can just extend URSA themselves for their specific implementation.
Yeah. Yeah, and do it as a kind of provider model. So we have a completely plain interface that just doesn't know. And then you can have a YubiKey provider. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be a special Intel provider. Yeah, that would be the way to go.
Yeah. So when I say, like, hardware TE support, it's mostly from, defining the interfaces. So... in looking at this, maybe I should post this in the chat. Does anybody have any issues with what's on that list? Are there items they would like to see removed?
Do we want to briefly throw that together for like an URSA doc, perhaps?
Sure.
It should be easy enough to do.
Because I can view this as there's some things that we should definitely do and some things we probably don't want to do. And it also depends on who wants this. Because, I mean, there's the Chinese fabric people who want the SM 2, 3, and 4. And then I know some Russia teams want the Ghost in there. And the I don't even know how to pronounce that, the Kuznichik.
By the way, can everybody see this? Is everybody looking at this?
Here we go.
I can share my screen if it helps.
Sure. I mean, you may just want to share the link.
I posted it in the chat.
So, Mike, under signature schemes, you now have SegP256K1, NIST B-curves, but these are not signature schemes, right? They're curves.
So what I meant by that is you can do signatures using those curves.
Sure. I mean, I guess you mean Schnorr over those curves, ECDSA as well, but
ECDSA. Yep. Yeah.
Well, Schnorr would also be nice, but
I guess for SecB, you would, expect Schnorr more than anything else. Huh? Maybe you can write Schnorr and ECDSA and then in parentheses over NIST curves and SecB, 256K1.
Sure.
Yeah, some specificity would be good there. Oh boy, Manu, you're gonna love the anonymous credentials document. okay, well, why don't we? So why don't we?
That's all I had for that.
Yeah, why don't we, going forward, why don't we just, why don't we make this into a document and, you know, people can add stuff, you know, maybe add your name if it's something really odd, just so we know who's making the request, and we can just keep that in mind and keep it in the docs repo. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah.
Awesome. Great. Well, I guess let's move on then. Do we want to talk about the encryption interface or the anon creds first?
I mean, you put the anon creds there, so I was wondering what you were intending with that.
Well,
so
I thought that, like, most of the people in this meeting were not also in the sovereign crypto meeting.
Yeah.
Do you want to just briefly go over that?
Sure. So,
can you share your screen and share the link?
I did post the link on the wiki. I will share my screen. Can everybody see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. This document needs some polishing, but the fundamental purpose of this is Sovereign wants to use anonymous credentials using elliptic curves. And right now we use some RSA-based anonymous credentials. And the goal is to put this all into zmix. And with anonymous credentials, the first thing we need is a signature that we can do selective disclosure with. And so we were intending to use BBS Plus for that. And so the math and kind of the setup and how we plan to do that is in this document. And then each credential is allowed to be revoked. And we will just do what we call set membership proofs for that, where the set is defined as a Merkle tree. And then there is an attribute in an anonymous credential that is, think of it as like a credential ID. And then when an issuer wants to revoke it because maybe a name was spelled wrong or someone got too many DUIs and so their license needs to be revoked, then they can do that. So when a credential holder goes to present a proof, whether his, say, license or whatever it is has not been revoked, it would not be in the set. So that's in here. There's also set memberships for kind of smaller static sets like days of the week, states in the United States, countries of the world, hours of the day kind of thing, where you might want to prove an attribute is one of a fixed set of values, like an enumeration. And so that's in here. There's also range proofs, which are, I want to test whether a value is greater than or equal to, or less than or equal to, or not equal. So all of that is in here. We're intending to use bullet proofs for a lot of this. And then for kind of the more dynamic sets where the amount of items that can be in that set can be really large, say over 10,000, then we'll probably use an R1CS type proof, such as like SNARKs or STARKs, more anything circuit-based that will do that.
What do you mean exactly when you say we're planning to use bulletproofs for many of these things?
So for range proofs, for example, we would be using bulletproofs.
Sure, but for credential proofs?
Like a proof of knowledge of a signature would be done with BBS Plus for the selective disclosure step.
Sure.
And then the smaller set memberships can also be done with bulletproofs. That way we minimize any trusted setups that may happen and or are required. So anyway, the document needs some work, but I did post it in here, so I'm open to comments. We kind of did like an in-depth overview of this yesterday in the Sovereign Crypto call, but the goal is that all of this would find its way into libzmix for others to use as well, but Indy plans to donate this into zmix and then use it for Sovereign, or Sovereign will plan to use it, but it'll be Indy will consume it.
Mike, Manu brings up a good point. I don't think anywhere in the document it specifies which techniques should be used for which applications.
That would probably be here. But yes, I can add that as a clarification.
So the document is
just a draft at the moment.
that's
fine.
It
needs a lot of polish.
that's perfectly fine. But it does, I mean, it's now a bit mixed of things that are indie, that indie wants. And so, I mean, so it doesn't, so when we were first talking about ZMix, we had this clear cutoff where we wanted to say, like, we just talk about, we prove knowledge of this and this, and we give building blocks for that. And this Correct. Doesn't really follow that structure, or do I, am I missing something?
You're missing it. So the building blocks for all of this goes into ZMix. How it's consumed goes into indie. Does that make sense?
Sure. Okay. But so how does this document reflect that?
It doesn't.
Okay.
But that I'm telling you that that's one of our goals, is the building blocks would go into ZMix.
Okay.
And then indie will just use those building blocks.
Okay. Perfect.
I think it does sort of hew pretty closely to the ZMix structure, but this document doesn't at this point do a great job of showing how.
Right. This document's sovereign specific. So, but the idea is that, you know, for those that want a BBS plus signature, it'll be in ZMix. If you want to do a range proof using bullet proofs, that's in ZMix. If you want, you know, bulletproofs to do small set memberships, we'll put that in ZMix and so on. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that way you can describe you can give it a proof description that ZMix can parse, and then you add your data and then out spits the proof. And then you give the proof description to a verifier and the proof, who can then verify it.
Is the concern more of like, is the implementation going to be too specific to indie? Like, whatever is going to go into ZMix, is that going to be too specific to indie? I think that's a little bit of what I'm hearing, but I would like some clarification on that.
Well, you implement what you can first, right? And then you try to abstract as much as possible. The goal is to not have it be indie specific. Any indie specific stuff will go in indie. And the general stuff that anybody could use for their own building block, as their own building blocks, would go in URSA. Anything else with that?
No, I'd encourage everybody to take a look and suggest comments on that, particularly after Mike and Dimitri can make a second draft that clarifies some things. So, I guess we don't have any other comments on that. Should we move to the encryption API discussion?
Yeah.
Awesome. I guess, do you want to keep sharing your screen, Mike?
Oh, sure. I guess I can. You talking about this encryption interface?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to go to the document we were looking at yesterday?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So the idea here is, and this will apply to other crypto primitives as well in URSA, like signatures, hashing, key exchange, and other primitives. But the idea is that we have two types of interfaces. One is for the developers, which is the, you know, misuse resistant, hides a lot of the details. All the end user does is say, I want to encrypt something, and I may not care what the algorithm is, just give me a secure one. And that, or use some default that's already good enough for me, and we'll just do that. And then there is the cryptographer layer, which is, I we just provide a whole bunch of primitives and building blocks, and that allows the cryptographers to mix and match and do whatever they want, and it's intended for experts. So the developer interface, the idea is that you would have just what we call public key encryption, and just has a new method that says, given like some parameters, that, and these parameters are hard coded, so they can't mix and match with dangerous combinations and screw themselves up with the algorithm agility. So like, for example, we say default, and here's some default parameters. And then it can generate the key pair and just say encrypt and decrypt, and that's about it in that case. Symmetric encryption would probably be about the same as this. But this is an example of kind of the simpler developer interface. And then the more advanced cryptographer interface would do something like this, where you say, I have an AEAD cipher, a stream cipher. These are what we call traits or interfaces. And then specific implementations can just consume those directly and say, well, for example, AES-128 is a block cipher, SM4 is a block cipher. So it just implements the interfaces, and then it can also be joined, say, with GCM or OCB, and then you get types that can just be composable like this. And that's the goal of the encryption interface. Does anybody see a problem with what we're proposing here?
So I don't know Rust too well, so I can't see if this is handled or not, but it appears that, for example, we're supporting CBC mode. And so for CBC mode, you need to provide an IV. And when you're decrypting, obviously you need to pick the same one to get your result back. And I'm not quite seeing where the ciphertext structure is defined or the developer obligation is defined to actually remember that. It feels like the really super simple interface would pick an IV for you and make sure it's a good one. But at the same time, it then needs to make sure that that is stored somewhere where the developer can't lose it.
Yeah, you could my thoughts were exactly what you just said, where the developer-friendly, the IV or nonce would be generated underneath and then just prepended to the ciphertext.
Okay. Yeah, that works. As long as we have the sort of, it's a very simple envelope format. We just need to make sure that it's written down and adhered to. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we've missed some things in this document like that. But yeah, as Mike points out, the basic idea is all of that complexity should be hidden from the user within the developer interface.
Yeah, no, I'm good with that. If there's space in the output, because one of the problems that arises from that is that you're not interoperable with other things. So if you wanted to create ciphertext or something in Ursa and then send it to a system which is built on OpenSSL, then obviously the ciphertext outputs won't align because of including all of this other sort of process information.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. We could probably have, we could definitely do something with SSL compatibility, but then the question becomes, do we want that in the developer interface?
No, I think probably not. I think that's just a thing to write down for the simple developer interface. I just think if we write those couple of things down very explicitly from the beginning so that people aren't tempted, or you know, later maintainers aren't tempted to blur that line, I think that's enough.
I mean, it's fine if we do have like, you know, an SSL compatibility mode, but we probably don't want just any, you know, it might not be a developer interface thing.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think that would be for now. I quite like this. The developer interface is always simple and only interoperates with itself. And if you need to work with sending things elsewhere, then let's, at least as a first pass, let's say you just have to use the expert interface entirely.
Yeah, I mean, the basic point is the developer interface, if you're just programming for yourself, it should be almost impossible to to build something insecure.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If you want compatibility with, say, Libsodium or OpenSSL or whatever other encryption library you want to have out there, I would say it's, you know, that's an advanced thing. If you know enough about those other libraries, then you probably know enough about what you're doing with the hazardous materials, as I call it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. I'm not hearing a whole lot of objection to this. This is just for simple encryption. This doesn't handle cases like where you might do multi-party computations. I actually expect that to be outside of IRSA if you want to do that. Because there's protocols that get involved, and we're trying not to do protocols too much in IRSA.
I mean, I suspect that we're going to have to get involved in that in the long run, but...
Sure. But this is for the simple encryption interface, and that to me would be a different type of thing.
Sure, yeah.
As you have to say encrypt share or combine and, you know, key gen shares, and anyway, it gets complicated.
It's quite possible. I don't know what you're thinking, Hart, would be the driver for doing that, but I built last year or so, I built a version of P11. That could do perfectly acceptable, you know, normal DAMGuard construction type MPC, and the developer wouldn't know because you just load it as a token, effectively, and then it goes off to all of the distributed servers and did its thing in the cloud. But the interface actually still holds, even if you've got at least for sort of threshold signatures
threshold signatures was. What I probably thought would be the driver, that you need to set up the key shares, basically. Yeah. And you either need a trusted party to do that, or you need to do a multi-party computation. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it requires a lot more thought, but just while we're thinking about the APIs themselves, it is possible to have a trusted dealer behind generate key P11 interface and then invoke a multi-party sign through the C-sign interface. So we have that option if that's the way we want to go.
Yeah, I mean, it'll just take a little more. I mean, I think it's somewhere we definitely want to go, but it will just take we should get the basics going first before we start messing with that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So I'm not hearing a lot of voice of concern or opinions on this.
I guess, yeah.
Small question. So at the high level, we only have encrypt, right? We don't distinguish between block and stream ciphers.
Yeah, so we thought about this, and I'm not sure there's a really good use case for a stream cipher-based encrypt. Do you have one?
I can think of one where I want to encrypt a file, or I'm only getting pieces at a time. I'm like a relay, for example. So I don't have all of it, or I just have pieces of it at a time. And I can't put it all in memory. So I guess it's more like encrypt block or stream cipher in that case doesn't really matter. But I there's definitely cases where I want to stream the data rather than just encrypt it all at once. Does that make sense? Because I can't load it all into RAM, or I may be waiting for pieces of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. If you want to encrypt a huge file, you would not load it all around. Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
So in that sense, like encrypt would probably have to be able to handle more than just, here's the message, here you go. I mean, maybe for the simple developer interface, there might just be two, which is give it the message itself, which is raw bytes, or give it like maybe a handle. Like a file handle or a stream, you know, a network handle or something that it just reads it from that.
Yeah. Sorry, Manu, I interrupted you. What were you saying again?
I don't know, actually. I was just asking because I was wondering if this was a conscious decision, and it seems like if at the lower level you did separate stream and block ciphers, So I was curious, if it shouldn't make it to the higher level, but I don't have a strong opinion on it. Or
do people have an opinion about which one? Like the stream cipher I could think of would be Cha-Cha 20, and then the block cipher would be AES in most cases, but unless you're in China or Russia.
Yeah, this is something we don't have to necessarily solve today either.
Okay. All right, so next steps, Hart. Why don't I? I'll finish writing up this, and then I'll put it in the RFC that we have open for this idea.
Yeah, you could probably put it in the docs, maybe.
The Ursa docs.
Yeah, this is technically a well. I would assume this would be a doc, and the RFC would just be like, we want to implement this doc, basically, right?
Okay.
I don't know. We could put it in the RFCs too. I'm fine with that. I don't know what the which convention we want to use here.
I actually like that better. Here's a doc that defines the interface, and then here's the RFC that says we're going to implement it.
Okay.
In that case, I don't know if you really need an RFC.
Well, I mean,
just to say we did it.
We can take a more permissive approach to pulls on the docs. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway. Yeah, so I guess people can just take a look and suggest edits and, we can go from there. If anybody has any sort of basic encryption interface they really want, then, please suggest it. So. All right. Well, I guess that's about all I had on the agenda for today. Does anybody else have anything they want to bring up? Mike, did you want to, you're already going for the WASM, I guess.
It's been up for almost a month and no one has done anything or said anything with it. And I've already got consumers of my private fork that want this, and I want them to go to Ursa, not my private fork.
Gotcha.
Can people please review this, or can we merge it? Well, I'd rather have you review it than just having me merge it, but because I don't think it looks good that I merge my own PRs.
Is there anything in particular that you think we should review, or any reviewer that you're particularly interested in having review?
The only thing is, do you like how the code is structured? I know Lavesh usually has strong opinions about that.
I think so. He's on. Would he like to come? Lavesh, do you want to comment?
I want to review this, but I haven't got time. Maybe I can review this in this week sometime.
But basically, it's I made it so you can compile everything to WASM.
Okay, and I've had some system issues also. I was unable to compile it, build the code also. So I don't know. Maybe it's my SSL version that's a problem. But if you can have some build instructions, it would be great. Because the way I tried it with WASM pack, I had SSL version issues. So I gave up at that time.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why we need to update Ursa docs is how to do that, but it's not too hard. I can send you the command to do it.
Okay, and it might be okay to build, my system might not have the right version of SSL because I'm facing some SSL version issues, so I don't know if it's just me or.
Yeah. Well, WASM is open SSL, so, and it doesn't use any external dependencies.
Okay, then maybe my command is wrong. So, yeah, I'll try to go through it this week.
Okay.
One thing I wanted to ask, and I don't see, I mean, I guess Dan's here from the Sawtooth folks. Have they tried using Ursa yet for their ECDSA yet? Because I know Vaporose or Shauna Mudson is the one that put all that code in there, or most of it.
Yeah, Sean would be the one to know about that. I don't think they're doing anything with it right now. They need to ask him.
Okay. Because I want to propose that we eliminate as many C callable libraries from the Rust as possible. Right now there are three. OpenSSL is one, but the only thing that we use OpenSSL for is the anonymous credentials big number library computations. That's it. The second is Libsodium. We're just mainly using that for EDDSA. And there is some raw Rust code that is already in the library. Let me change my share. And then you can see what I'm using. And what it does is I've benchmarked it, and it runs just as fast or faster than Libsodium does. So, yeah. The library is called Rust Crypto, but there's... it also implements the ECDSA for the same Bitcoin function calls, and it's just as fast or almost as fast. It's like 96% of the C callable library, and the APIs are the same. The Libsodium one is faster in Rust than it is in C code, which surprised me. So these are the crates if you're interested in looking at them. It's called Rust Crypto, and then there's this one. But what I'm thinking is, if no one has a problem with that, then we could remove those. The only reason I, the only hesitation I have is, do people have a strong opinion about having vetted libraries for those specific functions? Like what Libsodium has been vetted, and the Bitcoin one has been, you know, battle tested. Would people rather have battle-tested ones, or are they okay with just having the Rust ones, which are they're API compatible? They produce the exact same results. They just haven't been audited, from what I understand.
So what you're doing is making the what you call the portable and secure modes. If I got the names right, the same.
Or they are exactly the portable same. Portable
and native modes, I guess. Or.
They're exactly the same API-wise. It's just under the hood, when I switch to portable mode, I drop all C callable libraries. That's the only difference.
Yeah, that's the current situation. But are you, so you're proposing to make both modes the same then, or maybe yep. eliminating the modes?
Mostly the same, as much as possible.
Yeah. The only concern, I don't have a concern about vetting, but other people may. The only concern is if there's a performance difference, and in this case, it doesn't seem like there is.
No, I wrote two benchmarks for that. Let's see if it's still here. Oh, must be under it. No, yeah, I've got them right here. So you can test them yourself. Those are the two main ones I tested. You just do cargo run, and then you give it the bin, test this one or test this one. And they run almost identical in speed, if not the Rust code almost runs faster than the C code in almost every case. So if I ran it, say, 10 times, then the Rust code wins the C code 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious if others have an opinion about, I would prefer to have vetted libraries versus code that just works. And that's not to say the Rust libraries can't be vetted. They just, as far as I know, the ones I've picked have not been. They might be in the future.
Yeah, I'm struggling to answer the question because obviously you might assume that vetted code should also work. But I'm not sure what real benefit we get. I mean, some of the Professor Green vettings tend to be from the point of view of can we as dissidents trust that this thing hasn't been backdoored by evil governments, rather than just picking the FIPS CMVP version of OpenSSL. So I'm not entirely sure, unless we have some kind of political or threat position, I'm not entirely sure what vetting really does for us. I'd rather have code that just works.
Well, and it's less code to maintain, right? If I don't have to have two modes.
Yeah. Yeah, because the problem with vetting is, I guess it gives you a baseline and you could check every diff from that point forward. But as I say, I think it sounds nice to have things vetted or certified or, let's say, NIST validated, but that's actually a status that goes stale relatively quickly.
So, Mike, who else are using these non-vetted Rust implementations?
The, like, say, Rust Crypto or this one?
Yeah.
Well, you can go up to crates.io and see how many people are using it. So, like, Rust Crypto, WASM.
But is there... Like, are there people who have a lot riding on their crypto implementations using this, I guess is my question.
I'm not entirely sure what you mean by that. Like, do you have a lot of consumers of this?
Yeah, are there, like, big organizations using this?
Well, like, the Rust Crypto one that I'm using has over 1 million people using it.
Okay, yeah, I mean, so sort of popularity without being broken is, in a sense, a source of vetting too, right?
Yes.
One concern I have is sidechannel, if they have modified the code to avoid sidechannel or make it more resistant to that. Because sometimes new code doesn't consider that, so I have no idea if the Rust code does that or not, like exiting loops early, for example, or something.
Yeah, I don't know how sidechannel resistant the Rust code is.
I don't know either. I haven't dived in to look at it. But, like, for example, Rust Crypto is written by the same, it's by Mozilla, the same guys that wrote, that do Rust. If that's any consolation. Let me look at the ED25519.
I mean, I also don't know. Obviously, we want to avoid side channel attacks whenever possible, but I don't know what models people are using in the sense that, you know, what side channel attacks do we need to protect against?
It's hard to say. Without talking to him.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe I can do that as an RFC, but...
side channel stuff?
No, the side channel stuff is a whole nother discussion.
Yeah, okay, good. I thought you were going to do an RFC for that. I was like, oh boy.
No, that's a can of worms. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. I was thinking of just an RFC to remove any C libraries. Like, first one would be Libsodium, second one the Bitcoin one, third one OpenSSL. just do them as separate things.
Yeah, let's double check with Sean, but
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. He's the one that has, I know, the strongest opinion, at least about the Bitcoin one. So, okay. Not hearing a lot of objection to it, so I guess it's a positive thing. But yeah, Dan, if you could have Sean get his opinion on that, that would be good.
Okay.
Awesome. I guess the to-do is also to review the WASM pull request.
Yes.
All right. Well, we've got about 10 minutes left. Does anybody else have anything they want to bring up or discuss?
The only other thing I had is if you'd heard anything from Hyperledger's side on getting a CI/CD pipeline up, or are we just stuck with the Fabric option?
I haven't heard anything recently. I think they've been really busy with the Hong Kong bootcamp stuff over the past couple weeks.
Okay. From Sovereign side, I'm setting up our own CI/CD pipeline that will basically just compile URSA and do our own checks against it for indie-specific features that we care about. And so we can say, like, this is the version that Sovereign has blessed, but, you know, I don't expect Hyperledger to do that for everyone, but I'm hoping that Hyperledger would have some pipeline in place that people can have some assurances about using it. And then if they want stronger guarantees, then they might have to set up their own as well.
And there's the problem that everyone has their own CI/CD pipelines.
Yeah.
Wait, let's, yeah, we should probably have another discussion about this, I guess. Maybe when Hughesby's back.
Well, it would be normal to have a lot of pipelines for this project, right? Because people have different standards, and usually they have to be validated by their own CI/CD pipeline in order to be a valid product for them.
Yeah, but we don't. That's
the standard for Sovereign.
We don't want to have like private or semi-private pipelines is the issue.
Okay, that makes sense.
Like, if you're telling me my code is failing because your private CI/CD pipeline, you know, has some issues with it, then that's not great, right?
Right. And you can set that. You can have a CI/CD pipe. You can have enforced CI/CD pipelines, and you can have ones that are just going to, they're going to check, but they don't have to check.
I mean, like, Sovereign is a pretty open organization. So, I mean, I doubt that this specific instance will be a problem, but in general, just the proliferation is bad news.
I would love to put it just all at Hyperledger if possible.
Yeah, but anyway, soapbox rant over.
Yeah, so if we could set up another talk about that, it would be good.
Yeah.
We'll
see what we can do.
We won't use URSA until there is one in place, and I'm guessing that Sawtooth won't either. I can't speak for them, but I know Indy won't. That's really their only hang up, is that there isn't one in place.
Okay, well, we'll tee this up for discussion at the next meeting. Hopefully Dave will be there and can update us.
Okay. Sounds good.
Are there any other topics or things people want to discuss? I guess not. Well, in that case, let's end the meeting, I guess, a few minutes early. Thank you, everybody, for coming. And we'll talk to you again in a couple weeks. Have a good morning, night, or whatever. So, thanks a lot, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, guys.